One of the things I have resolved to change about my preaching these last few years is to spend less time picking on the people who made our lectionary or our calendar of readings. It must have been an impossible task to take essentially the entire Bible and try to break it up over 3 years in a way that makes a semblance of sense. And so this morning, I am simply going to echo Reverend Kate's ever so polite words from last week. They are clearly still not invested in you knowing the context of this gospel reading. And that lack of context is perhaps what leaves us with so many questions. What's this festival? Why are there a bunch of Greeks there? Why would these Greeks want to see Jesus? Why is he talking about his death so much already? We're only halfway through the story. Those are really good questions, and I thank you all for asking them. I'm going to take you on a whirlwind recap of the last chapter and a half or so. Not only will that set us up for today, it's also going to set us up for many of the readings we will hear over the next 2 weeks. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. I think most of us remember that poignant moment, right? Well, it stirred up the people so much that they became deathly afraid of their Roman overlords. And the religious leaders figured the best solution to this problem was to kill Jesus. But they had to try and find him first, because he wasn't making it easy. Meanwhile, with Passover approaching, the people from all over Israel were gathering in Jerusalem, as they would do for the Passover. With 6 days left before Passover, however, Jesus is a couple miles away from Jerusalem, in a town called Bethany, at the house of Lazarus. Hanging out with Lazarus and his sisters, Martha and Mary, having dinner. And this is when we would read another poignant story where Mary takes a whole pound of expensive perfume and anoints Jesus. Except in John's version, it's a little different. She poured it onto his feet and then wiped them clean with her hair, which actually sets us up for a complete reversal when Jesus washes the disciples' feet. But we're going to save that story for Maundy Thursday. The next day, or 5 days before the Passover, Jesus makes his triumphal entry into Jerusalem with the crowds cheering him on. But that story is next week, palm branches and all. It has, however, caught us up to what we just heard, slightly out of chronological order. So this festival mentioned is the Passover. But not just any Passover. Jesus has had many Passovers, but this one, everyone's looking for him. Some want to catch a glimpse of the famous itinerant preacher. Others probably want to ask for a miracle, and yet others to kill him. This Passover will be Jesus' last one on earth, and he clearly knows it. John tells us that some of these people trying to find Jesus are Greeks, who here represent probably the Gentiles, all the non-Jewish people. They want to see Jesus as well, but in the original, they want to see him with the sense of spending time with him. They don't just want to look from afar. They want to meet Jesus. They want to talk with him, interview him. But yet he gives their request no reply. Instead, he tells them and the entire crowd assembled around what it meant. This was now the gathering of the nations that the prophets had foretold. And because the whole world had now heard of Jesus, it was time for him to finish his mission. The hour had come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Not for his own sake, but so that it could change the world. So that creation would once again be reconciled to God. A reconciliation that could never come from human initiative, not from such fallen people. but it had to originate in God through Jesus, both fully human and fully divine. In other words, it was only God's loving yes that could overcome humanity's stubborn no. Yet Jesus also made it clear that the giving of his life was intended to be a pattern for his believers, his followers, his disciples. That the honor and the dignity bestowed by God was worth far more than anything the world had to offer. That reconciliation with God and each other is an ongoing process that they and we are called to do each and every day. That serving God requires a sacrificial and self-giving love, a commitment to putting others before yourself. Just like those Greeks, I bet we would all like to see Jesus, sit with him, talk with him, have dinner, maybe even ask for some miracles. But just like them, we cannot. Our revelation is meant to be something different. The Jesus we know died and was lifted up. The Jesus we know showed us that death is just new life. That darkness cannot conquer the light for very long. For that sermon, you're going to have to wait 2 weeks. For today, just remember that we too are called to surrender our lives. Not to evil, not to the world, but to God. And serving Christ means following Christ wherever it takes us. Amen.